on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Portfolio Manager, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is Monday, May 11th, 2015 edition of InvestTalk, and we'd like to welcome all of our listeners, whether you're beginner or experienced. We welcome you to join in on the conversation, whether you're listening via podcast, online, at investtalk.com, or our terrestrial stations in California. We want to hear from you, no matter what avenue you are tuning in on. Now, Steve and I talk about our InvestTalk Insider program. I really believe it's a great resource for investors. Now, as an InvestTalk Insider, you now have access to many investment resources that come straight from our desks, from professional portfolio managers. Now, the special watch lists are created to give you an idea of the type of investments the pros consider when exploring certain asset classes. That sometimes can be the hardest thing. You know, you want to invest in, you know, X type of asset, whether it's bonds, real estate, large cap stocks, growth stocks, whatever it is. The hardest thing sometimes is just to say, okay, what is the list I should just consider? Right? There's now hundreds of alternatives for all the different types of asset classes, so it can be difficult. So that's what we try to do there. Now, one of our info sheets is about managing a bond portfolio. Now, fixed income offers a lot of value points that equities do not. One major characteristic is that they generally are less risky than equities. And if a company falls into bankruptcy, bondholders are paid first before equity shareholders can claim anything. Now, they offer stable income versus dividends derived from equities, which yields are dependent on management discretions. They can cut that dividend payment. They can reduce that dividend payment. They can eliminate that dividend payment. So fixed income is a little bit different, where that fixed rates doesn't change, right? Now, if your portfolio objective requires some fixed income securities, we would advise you ladder and diversify your bond purchases. This can be easily done with purchasing different maturities of bonds from various sectors reaching out, you know, 5-7 years or so. This strategy will allow you to reinvest bonds that mature at higher yields if interest rates go up and you don't have any of that depreciation of a bond fund. So that's something that we talk about in one of those info sheets, and just one of many that can help guide you to make better financial decisions. Now, do you have questions about bonds or laddering bonds, CDs, equities, specific companies, specific sectors, specific countries to be invested in? We want to hear from you. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, and our number is 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. Now, it's time for the Q&A to begin. Let's take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. This is Quentin from Massachusetts. I was just listening to a Thursday podcast, and the question you had about wearables, whether they'd be the next big thing, is an interesting one, and you mentioned Apple, because I think if you remember back in the personal computer days, Apple was, you know, was in that, if you will, in that market business. But it wasn't until IBM actually got into the market with a personal computer that Apple's computer, which was actually Apple II, which was there before the IBM computer, IBM sort of basically gave credence to the personal computer. Apple was just a hobbyist toy. But when IBM came out, people suddenly started to think, ooh, personal computers are useful. So anyways, I just thought I'd pass that on. Maybe Apple's entry into the market, in fact, will be one that will make people look at another, if you will, startup that's already been in the market. Just triggered that thought when I heard you talk about Apple wearables in this potential new market. Thanks. Have a great day.
I love that call. I do. It's not a question. It's just a comment. I like to hear those. You know, what are your thoughts on a particular topic we're discussing? We are very open to those. We like to hear those. And this is one of those. They're fairly rare on the program. Most of them are about stock questions. But this is talking about a specific topic that we covered. And I like it. And I like what he's saying. It makes a lot of sense. You know, remember, back in the early 80s, Apple wasn't the Apple it is today. It wasn't as ubiquitous as it is today. It was still kind of a small startup company. It was popular to a certain niche marketplace. And a lot of people knew who Apple was. But it really... Their products weren't all over the place, and you know, Steve Jobs' vision of having a computer, or I think it was actually Bill Gates' vision of having a computer on every desk in America, was far from being fulfilled. And he's right. When IBM came aboard, then people started taking this space of PCs seriously. That it wasn't just a gimmicky thing. It was actually useful, and I could see that with Apple being the one that brings wearables to the forefront, to legitimacy, the same way IBM brought the PC into legitimacy. And I agree. I think it will spark the interest and increase the interest in this particular area of the marketplace, but the big question is, is it going to stand on its own 2 feet? It could increase the interest, but over the long term, wearables have to stand on their own 2 feet, just like PCs did. The PCs got better and better and more useful as time went on, because there was innovation and it was a product that made sense, and there was a lot of innovation to be created. Now, the big question is, how much innovation is there to be created with wearables, and that's not already being created on our phones, on our smartphones? And it's hard to know. It's very hard to know. And maybe the next big wearable company isn't Apple. Maybe it's another company. So I like where he's coming from. I like his thought process with that. It makes a lot of sense. I don't think it changes the cloudy aspect of the wearable marketplace over the long run, but maybe in the short run it makes sense that could spark some interest. So thank you for the call. I like what you're talking about. I like your point of view, and it's going to be interesting to see who is going to benefit from the wearable trend that is taking hold to some extent, and whether or not it's going to get to a fever pitch will be very, very interesting. Now, some analysts believe we are most likely in the latter third of this bull market. What inning? Is it the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning, or is it the ninth inning? Right? Are we the setup man just come in, or are we facing the closer right now? That's the big question. Now, should you be adjusting for a coming downturn? That's our main talking point today. But I also have some other ones as well. I want to talk about stock buybacks. There is an interesting article or an interesting report out of the Harvard Business Review, and it was accusing greedy CEOs of advocating for public research while at the same time pumping money into share buybacks in order to gin up their stock-based compensation, because it pushed the stock prices up, and enriching themselves while impoverishing the rest of the country. And this article kind of refutes that. And I kind of agree with some basic tenets of the Harvard Business Review article, and I also agree with some tenets from this, I think it's a Forbes article? It's a Forbes article. And I think it's something we should be discussed. It really should, because there's record borrowing with record stock buybacks from corporations, and that's really what's keeping this market up. It really is. Outside of stock buybacks, people are taking money out of the market. And I think when corporations begin to pull back on their borrowing, that's when you start to see the next bear market. But you need to understand what's going on with buybacks and how it's feeding into the market. And is it good for companies? Is it good for the country? So I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about bond yields. Bond yields are arising. They are up. They had a couple pullback days, Thursday and Friday of last week, and the 10-year now is closed today at the highest level since December of last year. So a high of 2015. We are now at the highest level for the 10-year, closed at 2.274%, and it's up there. So what does this mean? What is the state of the bond market? We're going to talk about that. And then I want to talk about Uber. I think Uber's business model can be applied to a lot of different industries. But the big question is, what industries would it apply well to, and what industries might it not apply so well, and where should you look for potential companies maybe to invest in, or maybe just to use, that use similar model as Uber, but operate in a different industry. Right? Now, today in the market, Dow was down 85, S&P was down 10, NASDAQ also down 10. Overall, it was a, I would say, modest down day in the markets. It was really a fade since the from the opening bell. The market was only up slightly at one point, at least the Dow was. The S&P was up a few times in the morning and really just started to slowly sell off. Nothing major, but it did have a decent decline by the end of the day. We're in May. Sell in May and go away. Is that what's going to happen this year? It's going to be interesting to see. Now, each month we deliver an economic and market forecast to our Invest Talk insiders. Where do we think the market's going to end up for the year? That's one that came out in May, and it went out last Friday. Your free insider membership also gives you access to our recorded webinars and many other topics and materials as well. Now, anybody can sign up for free. Just go to investtalk.com. John in San Jose is next after the break. Let's go to John in San Jose. How you doing, John?
Good. How are you doing?
Well, what can I do for you?
Yeah, I enjoyed the show. Thank you. I really appreciate the show.
Thanks for calling in and thanks for listening.
Yeah. Hey, the question that I had was about your view on the intermediate and long-term munis.
Okay.
California munis as well as the national munis.
Okay. Are you looking at munis because you're in a high tax bracket and you're looking to save the taxes? Is that why you're looking there?
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, intermediate and long term municipal bond fund. You're looking at funds or individual bonds?
So it's a mixture. It's a mixture of few individual bonds as well as some funds.
Okay. Well, the funds, you have to understand, you're going to be subject to, the changes in interest rates. Interest rates go up, they affect all types of bonds, not just, treasuries, but munis as well, and corporate bonds, et cetera. So understand, when you get into intermediate long-term bond funds, there's a considerable interest rate risk there. So if I was going to do one, I would do specific bond funds or specific bonds. I think the biggest issue for me with in the muni space is that right now things seem pretty safe, seem pretty good.
Yep.
But go back to 2008 and you have a big bear market and you don't have capital gains returns. You have prices of homes go down, things like that. I think it's likely there's going to be a redux, revisiting of those problems that you saw 6 years ago or so. So don't think those are out of the woods. I think having a little bit of muni bonds in your portfolio is fine, but I wouldn't have more than 10% of your assets in muni bonds.
Muni bonds today. And when they talk of raising the interest rates and the expected time frame for that, is that mainly going to impact the short-term rate? So how is the yield curve really going to look like? Is it going to get better?
John, I'm going to go to break. We'll talk about it right after we get back.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And you can read Steve's latest market commentary on the job market right there on investtalk.com.
Let's go back to John. He's talking about muni bonds. And your question, John, was about the short-term bonds and will interest rates affect short-term bonds, correct?
No, I think my question was when the interest rates do go up, the so-called interest rate that we hear about, would it impact the short-term end of the yield curve so the yield curve would become flat or the yield curve would completely just shift up?
Usually when the Fed starts to raise rates, it usually flattens the yield curve because they really influence short rates the most, more than long-term rates. It's one of the reasons why they did QE, right? Because when they do QE, now they can influence long-term rates because they can purchase long-term bonds and things like that. Whereas a normal monetary policy, when they're not doing QE, they just really affect the short-term rates. And so, yes, as the threat of the Fed raising rates and the fact when they finally do raise rates, it should flatten the yield curve. Yes, but you know, if you have short-term bonds, it'll affect it. But you know, the historical volatility of short-term bonds is much lower than, you know, intermediate and long-term bonds.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much.
No problem, John. Thanks for calling. So that's about muni bonds. He was in San Jose. Now let's talk about our main talking point today. Is trouble looming in the markets? And this is from Kiplinger Personal Finance. And it was an interview with Jim Stack. He is the president of Stack Financial Management. It's an investment firm. And they asked him a few questions, and I agree with a lot of his answers, but let's go through them. First, the first question was, you becoming increasingly nervous about the stock market. Why? Well, he says, as recovery and bull markets mature, the doubt that created the bear markets and created the capitulation on the downside of the bear market dissipates, and those fears turn into optimism or even complacency. And we're starting to see that today, he believes. And by definition, the bull market peaks when optimism is highest. So they say, you know, is a bear market looming? This is, well, by historical comparisons, we're most likely in the latter third of this bull market. And I would agree with that. We are. We surely are. It's just a matter, like I said before, are we in the seventh inning? Are we in the eighth inning? Are we in the ninth inning? Or are we in extra innings? So we're definitely near the end. Now, what warning signs are you looking for is the question. And he says, first, the Federal Reserve has not even announced when they're going to start bringing up short-term interest rates. And that is one factor that usually creates a bear market. You know, usually the higher rates lead to tighter credit, tighter money, and less economic activity. That turns into lower profits, and market starts going down, and that means wealthy people have less money to spend, and consumer spending drops, and economic growth drops, etc. So that's kind of the feedback loop. So he's looking for unexpected drop in consumer confidence. He's also looking for internal indicator, technical indicators for the market itself, meaning if fewer stocks are rising overall in the marketplace, that's a big red flag. Then they ask, are stocks overpriced? He says it's very difficult to find attractive values. And I've been saying this to clients really for the past year and a half or so. It really has been a tough place to find good values. He says, well, if you factor into the equation of interest rates, actually equity markets are probably slightly undervalued. But if you had any type of normalcy to our monetary policy, meaning interest rates, what the Federal Reserve is doing, you're going to have a big wake-up call. And he says, the dependence on low rates to justify current valuations make this one of the most interest rate-sensitive markets ever. And I definitely agree with that. Now, finally, they ask, what is the best strategy? Well, he thinks adjusting your portfolio's allocation to stocks, shifting sectors, technology, healthcare, industrials, energy stocks typically perform well in the final third of the bull market. Now, some of that's not true. Energy stocks obviously have not recently, but they have this year, but in 2014 they had not. And what do you expect from the next bear market? He says it won't be like the one in a generation, 07 to 09 bear market, but it certainly won't be mild, and I certainly agree with that as well. He says, my guess is that losses will be 35 to 40%. I would agree with that as well. I like this guy. I want to meet him. And then he says, as for timing, I would say the likelihood of the bull market extending into 2016 would be 1 in 3, meaning of only about a 30% chance of it actually not petering out this year. And I think that's a pretty good he's pretty spot on with all this. So that's coming from a third-party source. I kind of agree with his opinions there. Something that everybody should understand and understand the big picture. Right? Coming up in the next half hour on Invest Talk 101, understanding the risks in holding bonds. I'm going to tie right into my next discussion point and what we just talked about now. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and I hope you'll stay with us. Give us a call. I want to hear from you. We have about 30 minutes left in the show, but it goes by quick, so give us a call. 888-99-CHART is our number, and this is Invest Talk.
Coming up on Invest Talk, answers to your questions, any money matter, comparing load and no load mutual funds, how to gauge your needs in retirement, 888-99-CHART.
Now, Invest Talk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, meaning not 4 to 5 Pacific time, you can still ask us on the next Invest Talk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Phil in Oklahoma City. I listen to my podcast. I'd like to get your analysis on Blackstone, B as in boy, X as in x-ray. What would be a good entry point, and how safe is the dividend? Thank you.
All right, looking at Blackstone Group. This is one of the largest, I think it's private equity. Some people will call it an asset manager, alternative asset manager, financial advisor. There's certain ways to describe it. They do a lot of different things. And they yield about 6.2%. Earnings supposed to fall 6% next year, but it's supposed to go up 59% this year. They own a lot of real estate. They went out and bought a ton of real estate after the crash, which to me makes this company very, very scary. I don't like that. I don't like that strategy. I think it's buying. I don't think they were opportunists to a point. But I think latter stages, they probably paid too much for some real estate. So, you know, is this dividend safe? Well, their payout ratio is about 74%. Now, back in 2012, when they weren't making as much money, their payout ratio was 128%. Now, they started to make more money, so they could start affording a higher dividend. To me, this is going to be a very volatile company to own. Bear market, this will get destroyed is probably a good way to describe it. It's not going to do well during a bear market. It went IPO really right before the peak in 2007, went IPO in June of 2007, and it had a high of about $30 and about call it $32 and hit a low of $3.55. So it went down about 90%. And I think, while I don't know if it'll be a similar decline in the next bear market, I could see easily a decline of this 60, 70% because of how much risk they take, how levered they are, those type of things. So is it cheap based on the numbers? Yeah, it's probably pretty cheap. But this is not a big blue chip steady company that you think you can own through every investment cycle and you're not going to have a lot of volatility. This is not a dividend that I think is going to be safe over, you know, through a bear market. I think it'll get cut, and it's one of the reasons why it'll go down a lot. So I'm not a big fan of Blackstone. Now, I haven't been a big fan of Blackstone for a couple of years now, and it's gone from 30 to 42, so I've been wrong. But I don't like their business model. I don't like the type of risk they've taken. The volatility of their earnings is dramatic. So while they're making a lot of money now, historically their earnings are volatile. And a company with volatile earnings, you don't want to be buying it when their earnings are really high. You want to buy it during the ebb of their earnings cycle. And this is, you know, kind of probably closer to the peak. So I'm not a big fan of Blackstone. Now let's talk about bond yields. Bond yields are a spiking. They ripped higher today, putting pressure on stocks and signaling a possible sea change in the global rate environment. And strategists are hard-pressed to really pinpoint a specific reason for the shift in the market. Traders in the futures pit in Chicago characterized the move as being similar to a global margin call, where each tick higher in the yield in new territory forced more repositioning. Now, the shift higher in rates then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy until there is a capitulative move. And I think we're probably close to that in the short term, but I do think it is a sea change in the global interest rate environment. I think we're still going to have ebbs and flows. You're still going to have months where rates fall. But we've said this a couple years ago, that we are approaching the end of a 30-year cycle. If you look at the history of interest rates, there's a 30-year cycle, up and down, 30 years up, 30 years down. Now, the magnitude of how high they go and then how low they go in each cycle changes. So where we'll go from here, from 2% or the low on the 10-year, I think it was 1.4, 1.3 something on the 10-year. Now we're at 2.27% at the close of today. And I think this is the beginning. This is the start of the global, of the 30-year march higher in interest rates. So expect that. And this is something I talk about with in about real estate. Real estate has had a giant tailwind for 30 years. Lower and lower interest rates. Went from mortgage rates of, you know, in the high teens, now down to, you know, 3 and change. That is a gigantic tailwind. Gigantic, enormous tailwind to real estate. And I think if you study the period before the early 80s, real estate didn't have anywhere close to the type of performance that you've had over the past 30 years. So I think that's what you're going to see here. I think you're going to see not that real estate won't be higher 30 years from now. I think it will, but you're not going to see the type of performance you see over the last 30 years. So this is, to me, a sea change in the global interest rate environment. Now, George Consalvis, the head strategist at Nomura, he says this is starting to become a bad omen. This is not good. There's enough leverage out there in different forms where if this is the end of the easy money, low, long-term rate story, and the Fed is not going to be able to hike rates, the long-term interest rate market is going to do the tightening for the Fed. And this will be a bad move for most financial assets. And if this move is really a referendum on central bankers providing too much liquidity, and if this is the hangover part, it could get much worse. So he's pretty worried about this. I think, like I said, this is going to be more of a slow slog higher. I think you'll have these fits and starts where people get scared and everyone's talking about it. Oh my God, rates are higher. And then you'll get a capitulative move and everyone freaks out and it's in the news. And then rates will start falling for a while. And then you'll have another, you know, move higher in interest rates. And you'll have that cycle repeat itself over and over. And I think that's what you're going to see here. Now, one of the big issues right now is lack of liquidity in the bond market. It's helping exaggerate these moves, but it's something that is probably a trend change. And you have some big auctions coming out this week. $24 billion in 3-year notes tomorrow. of Treasuries, $24 billion in 10-year notes on Wednesday, and $16 billion on 30-year notes. Those last two, $40 billion in bonds will be interesting. See where those yields come in at. And right now, it feels like a buyer strike. No one's really selling bonds dramatically, but there's not a lot of buyers out there. So, interesting what's going on in the bond market today. Now, I urge you to read Steve's market commentary of the jobs right there on investtalk.com. You can also see his portfolio checkup schedule for California. And if you're a podcast subscriber and would like to take advantage of this free service, you can do it via Skype or over the phone, via email, etc. Just click on the Make an Appointment button on investtalk.com.
There's another way to get into the conversation on InvestTalk. Send your question or comment via Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at KPPFinancial. And you can get your question to us by sending a message to at KPPFinancial. But of course, our favorite is still the phone, because you can get in on the conversation. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Justin right now.
Now it's time for InvestTalk 101, and it's perfect following the last segment when I talked about interest rates. Now, bonds are often misunderstood by investors, and they can be confusing. I understand that. The bond market is very complex. But let's start with the basics. Now, a bond is simply a loan to an entity, a company, a municipality, the government, etc. Now, with bonds, the interest is paid as a coupon, usually annually or semi-annually. Then, at the maturity date, the principal is returned, and that ends the transaction. You're done. You get interest payment every 6 months or every year, and then at the end of whenever it matures, you get all your money back, and you say thank you, and you go on your way, and then you go buy another bond if you want, or you go buy stocks, or do whatever you want with it. Now, like any loan granted to anyone, there is risk for the lender, and you are the lender. Now, people think of bonds as low-risk investments, and while they are lower than stocks, they're not all low-risk. They aren't. There are risks. Now, first, there's credit or default risk, and that's the risk that the holder won't be paid, either in interest or in principal, meaning you won't get your interest payment, and then you might not get your principal back either. Now, most of the time, if they do default, they go into bankruptcy or whatever, you're the bondholder. Usually, maybe you're senior bondholder. There are senior, there are subordinate. That gets more complex. But you will probably get something. Now, it could be, 10 cents on the dollar. It could be 50 cents on the dollar. It all depends. But there is that default risk, and you need to understand that. And that's why we talk about junk bonds. Everyone likes junk bonds because you get this high interest rate, much higher than all these other types of investments. Well, that's great when you're in a bull market, when there's risk on, when people are taking on risk, but when there isn't, that's an issue, right? When the market goes to risk off and less people want to lend, right now it's easy because there's more money flowing into the bond market because people aren't worried about default risk and want to take more risk. They're trying to get that yield. Well, when do you start to see a few defaults, people start to get more weary, and it kind of snowballs on itself, right? So there's always credit risk, and junk bond funds have huge credit risk. Now, there's also a repayment risk. That's when a bond is paid off earlier than expected. Now, of course, the downside for the investor, this can happen when interest rates drop and company has no incentives to keep paying bondholders a higher rate than they would have to pay through another source. So instead of continuing to hold a high interest investment, investors are left to reinvest funds in a lower interest rate environment. So if you buy a bond that is what is called callable, meaning, okay, you go and buy a bond and it's paying 6%. Company's paying you 6%. And it's callable, right? And interest rates fall, and all of a sudden that company can now borrow at 4%. Why are they going to continue to pay you 6 when they can just go sell new bonds, take the proceeds, pay you all your money back, and start paying the other investors 4%. Saves them money. Think about the same thing happens with mortgage bonds. If you're investing in mortgage-backed securities, there's prepayment risk, a lot of prepayment risk, especially when interest rates are falling, right? Because homeowners refinance. They do the same thing a company does. They say, I don't want to pay a 5% mortgage. I can go get a mortgage at 4%. I'm going to go get a 4% mortgage and pay back my 5% mortgage. And the person that held that, or company, or whoever held that 5% mortgage, they get all their money back, but they're no longer getting 5%. Now they got to go reinvest it at 4% or something else. Okay, so that's prepayment risk. What else? There's also interest rate risk. It's simply a risk that interest rates will change. And as I said before, if interest rates significantly decline, the investor faces the possibility of prepayment risk, as we described. And if interest rates increase, the investor will be stuck with a yield below current market rates. And that's not good. That's why under certain conditions, shorter-term bonds are best, because they don't really have that. Because, yeah, interest rates rise, but bond's going to mature in a few months, whatever. It actually is better, because in a few months, I get to get my money back and go reinvest it at this higher rate. Now, the longer you have until the bond matures, the more interest rate risk you have. Now, that's Invest Talk 101. Do you have a question about bonds, stocks, whatever it is? I want to try to answer them. It's easy to get through to us via phone at 888-99-CHART. So let's do it now. We have about 10 minutes left in the show. Before we go to the last break, let's go to Tony in Fremont. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm doing well, Justin. Thank you for taking the call. Great show.
Thank you.
My question is on G, like girl, B, like boy, X, like X, Xerox.
Yeah, this is Greenbrier Companies. They supply transportation equipment and services to railroad and related industries. They mainly make rail cars, right?
That's right.
Yeah. They yield about 1%, and earnings are going up a lot, and they're doing really well because of the shale revolution. You know, all these tanker cars are moving goods, and that's why they've been doing well over the past few years, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes, their earnings came out. They came out about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They were good earnings. They upped their forecast for the rest of this year. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering, what do you see a good entry point, if there is an entry point for this stock?
Well, I think this company is overvalued to a small extent. I'm wondering, how do they increase their earnings so dramatically? 104% year over year. That's a little interesting to me. They buy a company? I'm not sure. You know, I think they're going to have a lot of problems with the oil industry and shale. That's not going to be as the volume's not going to move as much. So I don't like that. I think it's a high risk investment to me, and I don't like the chart. The chart looks weak to me. So I'm not a fan of it. I think in the next bear market, it will be great to be pick up. I would have it on my watch list, but I wouldn't pick it up today.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for calling. Now, we're coming up in the last segment of the program. Let's try to get your question to us. Call us now at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast and coming up on the next Invest Talk. Most Americans own homes, but having a single property or a few rentals doesn't offer true real estate diversification. Investing in real estate the REIT way. That's our talking point for Tuesday, May 12th. And we hope you can join us then.
Now, we're here live 4 to 5 Pacific time each day, but we can take your call anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 888-99-CHART is the number. If you're not with us during the live show, you can call 24 hours a day.
Hi, this is John from Walnut Creek. A friend of mine watches you so religiously. You have a great program. I have a question. We're looking at the stock chart of Whole Foods, and I was wondering if you can comment on whether that's a head and shoulders or reverse head and shoulders, and what the significance of that pattern is, if it's a buy or sell signal. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Is it a head and shoulders or a reverse head and shoulders? I would say it's neither. trying to see. Well, it could be. Yeah, it could be a head and shoulders. I'm getting into charting here, which can get pretty complex, and you kind of got to see what I'm doing. But I can see what he's talking about. It's a potential head and shoulders is really what it is. It's not there yet. It would really have to go, I would say, below 36 bucks, $37. It's at $42 and change now. If it went below that, stayed there, closed there on a weekly basis, at the end of a week, then I would say, okay, head and shoulders is triggered. Until then, it's just not. It's not a head and shoulders pattern. There's a lot of times there. This is getting technical charting, and if you're an InvestTalk insider, there are plenty of chart lessons that kind of explain this a little bit. But basically, there's a lot of head and shoulders, potential head and shoulders patterns that form in particular stocks, and a lot of times they don't play out. So you don't react to them or worry about them until they actually trigger, meaning this is going to have to go that below that level, like I said. Don't react too soon. If it goes below it, yeah, sure, short the stock. It could go down. If it does trigger, let's see. The target would be about, the 2008 lows, $5 a share. So that's certainly a possibility. But like I said, if unless it gets there, it's not going to there's nothing to worry about. you're just talking hypotheticals. Anyway, so before we close the day, I want to talk a little bit about Uber. I love Uber. It's a great service. I know friends that are Uber drivers. They make money on the side, things like that. And the success of Uber has really inspired hundreds of startups that call themselves the Uber of this, the Uber of that. There are now apps for ordering groceries, to have your car washed, to get legal counsel, etc. And Uber is part of a broad category of on-demand mobile services. And thanks to smartphones and cloud computing, it's easier than ever to connect people who need a job done with people looking to make an extra buck and monetize their spare time. Now, there's a couple aspects of Uber and the industry that make it so successful. First, it's a commoditized service. People don't really care. I talked about this before about the airline industry. Airlines are so overpriced. Everyone loves airlines right now, but it's a commoditized business. There'll be new entrants. Margins will be squeezed. It's a commodity. You just want to get from point A to point B, and taxi service is the same thing. So it makes us pretty flexible in terms of who delivers that service. And most other industries, we really care, you know, who cuts our hair, who babysits our children, who performs home repairs, legal advice, etc. So it's you still, if you want to compete in other industries and have an Uber type platform, it needs to be you need to differentiate yourself a little bit. And then also, it's high frequency use. You use it a lot, maybe once a week, once a month, you know, more than just most services. So those are the two aspects that make Uber so great. It's a commoditized service. You don't really care who shows up as long as you get to where you want to go. And it's on demand. It's frequent. And so if it's going to apply to any other industry, those also need to apply as well. So understanding why Uber is successful is important for other industries. Now, before we close the hour, what we try to do on Invest Talk is to help every person who listens make the best possible decision about their money. Now, if you have a detailed question that you'd rather ask me or Steve directly, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Steve button, or contact Justin, and we will get back to you. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-400-8475. 877-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.